Mixing session number 11202, reel 11.
Mr. Rogers, reel 10. You were moving back with the 6th Battalion, Mr. Rogers. What happened next?
Well, we got down, we got into a safe area, and we brewed up, and after we'd brewed up, we moved to another position with the 6th Battalion. And then it started to, the lights started to fade, it started to get a little bit darker. And in the position that we were in, I think the tanks must have been quicker than what we thought they would have been. And they followed us down and they start picking off the trucks one at a time. They were just blowing them up. The lads were running about wondering what was happening, and then they realised what was happening, and we must have had some artillery guns with us, and they took these tanks on with open sights, you know, and they belted them, and in the end the tanks had moved away. In the meantime, the truck that I had been on, that it was a full corporal, and he just went to pieces, absolutely to pieces.
How did this?
He was shaking, his hands were shaking, and he had his Tommy gun round his shoulder, and it was just there hanging like a ukulele, and he was, well, practically in tears. He didn't know what he was going to do. So we told him to get hold of himself, that you know, he'd have to do better than that. And in the end, we pushed him down into a hole and just left him there. And the tanks started to withdraw. And then there was a major battlescope come up to us. And there were very lights going on behind us. They were putting the very lights up. And he said to us, he said, down there, he says, that's they're waiting for us to go down there. And he said, we're not going down there. He says, we're going to go through these tanks. And he says, after we've got through them, he says, we're going to swing round and sidestep these people that are waiting for us down here. So we must, the 6th Battalion then must have gotten into a position where they were going to be in the bag. So we loaded up on the trucks. And before we did, Major Battlescombe said, where's the 9th DLI? And I think there was about 10 or 12 of us then. And he said, I want two on, don't you all together, two on separate trucks. So he split up the number that there was and put two 9th DLI men on each truck. I expect he wanted to keep the 9th Battalion name alive. And we did that. We come through, the tanks were firing when we got two of them, crossfire. We just kept down, and it wasn't a case of attacking them or anything, we just blazed through them as far as I was concerned with the truck. And with this firing going across, I was lying on the side of the truck, and I was worried about my head if something hit at the side of the truck. So I put my hand around on the truck and I found a box. So I pulled it down in between the side of the truck and my head for to give myself some protection there. And eventually we got through and we made the sweep round and we got clear of them and we got down to a base. And when I woke up, I had a bit of sleep when we got into a quiet area. When I woke up, I found I pulled a case of sticky bombs down the truck for to protect my head. So if the truck had been hit and the sticky bombs as well, I think. Well, I must go back a little now and tell you about the Gazala box and the anti-tank new company being formed, anti-tank company. And it must have taken place in the Gazala box. And I must then have been given the job of Storman, I think, with D Company. I was back again. I know I was back again on Storman's job and administration. And when this company had been formed, there was some of the soldiers were left over. And one of them came to me, which was Adam Wakenshaw. He'd been down at Murder Matru earning this Victoria Cross. But he'd been missed off the gun crew, and he was surplus to requirement of the makeup of the new anti-tank platoon that had formed. So he came to me and he said he'd been posted, and he said, "I've been with the territorials in D Company all the time the war had been going on," and he said, "I'm going to be sent back now," and he said there's no room for it on the guns. So I said, "Well, what do you want me to do?" He said, "Well," he said, "you're well in with these people." That was the officers, you know. He said, "You're well in with these. Can you not say to get me kept in the battalion?" So I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I'll." Major Woods was the company commander then, and he was a person that you could approach without any worries. So I went and I said, "Well, hang on and I'll go and see him." And I went and I saw Major Woods. And he said, "Well," he said, "oh, the company was made up." He said, "What can you, what would you want me to do?" I said, "Well," I said, "he's out there." I said, "He'd never been out of D Company." I said, "He's nearly in tears." And I said, "Before we get much further up there," I said, "somebody's going to go down with sand fly fever or something like that." And I said, "You might need somebody else for the gun crew." So he said, "Well," he said, "can you find him a job?" I said, "Oh, I can find him a job, all right." So he said, "Well, right," he said, "just hang on to him for a bit." So poor old Adam Wakenshaw might have been posted and might have been sent away, but however, he was kept in the battalion. The next time I saw him, he said he'd been taken training for the gun, and he was delighted. And I saw him again later on after that, and he come and told me, especially, he said, "I'm on the gun crew." And, well, I said, I'm pleased for you. And there he was. He might have been sent away, and it was his own doing. He used me as an instrument, and Major Wood had to make the decision for to keep him there, but it was his own decision. He wanted to be on the gun, and he was granted it, and it worked out that he won the Victoria Cross. But might have been different, might have been sent away somewhere else. And before we moved him to Marath, we knew we were going up to some kind of action, and the CVs were having a judge service in one place, the RCs were having another one, you know, the CV, the Abide With Me and all that was ringing out in the distance. And I saw Adam Wakenshaw coming back from Holy Communion from that day, and after that I never saw anything of him.
That was before Murder Matru.
That was the last time I saw him. And
what was he like as a person?
Well, he's just kind of a rough diamond type of a lad, you know. What you would call maybe a labourer, the shipyard, or I don't know what his trade was, if he had any trade, I don't know what his trade was. But he was just a hard man. And he had been brought up hard. I might have mentioned it, that he used a box for Murphy, the showman, and that would go three rounds with him. I think he'd lost a son, because we had a long talk at one time when they had a bit of a scheme before I went to the Burr game, and I had a long chat to him about his home life, and he was a bit of a lad at school, you know, and they used to tell his mother, and the mother used to go up and say to the teacher, and he said it was his own fault. He'd been really in the trouble, but you know what mums and dads are, they used to go up and try and sort the teachers out. And he admitted, he said, that he was at their fault. But I would say he was just a kind lad, rough and ready, and, well, I don't know whether he would be the best of soldiers, but he'd been in the Territorial Army, and that was his life, and he wouldn't let anybody down.
Do you feel he had a great love of the regiment and his comrades?
Oh, yes. Well, he proved it to me in the early days when we were at Tiverton. You know, I've already mentioned it. If you were a Durham, that was it. And that was why he was crying. He didn't want to leave the Durhams. He'd been with them all the time. And he was wrapped up in the Durham Light Infantry. And he thought it was sacrilege that Adam Wakenshaw had to be posted away from it. So
you mentioned religion on one or two occasions, Mr. Rogers. How strong was your religious faith from the point of view of carrying you through the dangers that you were in and about to continue to be in, of course? Did you have a strong religious belief?
Yes, I am. It was there all the time, and you could only pray and put your trust in God. That's how, you knew that you were going to be into danger, in and out of them, and I just put myself in God's hands, and that was all there was to it. And even a man like Wakenshaw, he had, you know, when we talked before Burra came there, he said he'd been a bit of a backslider, but yet his thoughts must have been on his God and on his religion. So it was there all the time, and I think it was in most of the men. Well, they couldn't do anything else.
So you were then pulling back. You've got through the cordon, and you were pulling back to where?
Yeah, to somewhere, I would think, in the Delta area. And the best thing that I ever saw was Captain Scott and Sergeant Wood walking across towards us, you know. And he hadn't known much about what had happened to the 9th Battalion DLI. I don't know where. I think he said he'd been on a recce. And he said, well, where are they all anymore? I said, well, up to now, this is it, you know, the number of lads that we had there. So he said, well, we'll just have to try and organise ourselves a bit. And he started to give different jobs out to different persons. And he gave me the post corporal job. I only had it for about 2 hours. He said, you can manage that, all right. And I said, no, anything I'll do. And after about 2 hours, in come the post corporal. And after that, there was soldiers coming from all over the place. You know, they were finding out where we were, and we were slowly getting built up again.
Did you have any men filtering back that were actually in the battalion at Mersmatru that had got away?
Oh yes, they were the men. They were the men that all been. They were coming back. That some of them had been taken prisoner of war, and our recce trucks would be going out, and they would see men being led across the desert as prisoners of war, and they would just go in and take the escort. There'd only be about two or three Germans in the escort. Take them over, and that lot were freed.
Any idea how many men you were talking about?
No, I can't, but I know that it wasn't long before we were formed into a brigade again, and we were back up with joined the New Zealand Division in the Alamein Line.
What do you recall where you were when you first got back to the Delta?
No, I cannot think of the name of the place at all.
But it was a camp.
Oh yes, it was a base camp, yeah. And one time we were on the edge of a aerodrome, and we must have been doing enough then, strong enough for to help out on this perimeter of the aerodrome. And I can remember the Jerry's come over and there was a raid, and we all stood too, and he dropped a lot of triangular things. When you looked at the sky, there was these things were silvery and they were all coming down. And seemingly there were things for the aircraft for to run over and burst the tyres. And there was hundreds of them and they all just fell down. But that was just perhaps one night or two nights. And we were, I don't know how, but we were soon together again at a brigade, and we were sent back up to the lines. We joined.
In the reorganisation, were you back at Stormont?
Yes, from then, yes.
Was this company or battalion?
I think it was headquarter company, Stormont in headquarter company, and then I finished up with a quartermaster.
What exactly were your duties as a Stormont?
Well, to supply, go for supplies, and supply the men with what they needed. Go for rations for the cooks. Supply the men with anything that they'd lost, or while they were there. General.
How exactly did it work? Did a company or a platoon or a man put in an order for you?
Well, the colour sergeant did that. You see, the colour sergeants, the sergeants of the platoons, you have to go to the colour sergeant, tell the colour sergeant that there's short of gaiters or bayonets, someone lost a bayonet and things like that. And the colour sergeant used to identify to us. And the quartermaster used to go off and with me or send me and collect these things from Royal Army Ordnance Corps or Royal Army Service Corps if it was rationed. Of course, we have to go regularly for the rations. And we used to have to go in there and then just bring them back and supply them back to the colour sergeant. And the colour sergeant used to see that the men that he was responsible for was really fitted out. Of course,
To indent for something, there would be a form, presumably, to complete.
Yes, that in the line, it was more or less a piece of paper. They didn't worry so much about the, like they do in England, three duplicate forms, and three forms and then duplicate and that, but they just used to use what was handy at the time. And they just used to indent for it and come to us and we used to send it down.
So the quartermaster stores would carry a great deal of items and equipment.
Yeah, not too much when we were in action, but enough for to keep the battalion going. You see, we used to have the needs that used to come in. The needs of the battalion used to come in from the quartermasters, so from the colour sergeants. And then the quartermaster used to go and collect it, and we had a truck which carried these stores, and we followed on when the troops went in action. From then on we were B echelon, and we used to be supplying them with whatever they wanted.
And how far would B echelon be behind the companies? As a general rule.
I couldn't say that it'd be a mile or 2 miles. It was a safe area. Otherwise, I don't think I would have been here to tell the tale, because from then on, If it wasn't with Stormont with their quarter company, it was Stormont, which I did eventually finish up with Lance Corporal to the quartermaster. From then on, it was BS alone for me, and that was it.
What other sections form part of the echelon? Can you discuss
probably part of headquarter company, pioneers, troops that stretcher bearers. Some of them would be up the line of the Jones, but there would be medical corps. It would be down at the B echelon, and the quartermaster, myself, and RQMS, they were all doing jobs, but they were that little bit behind the post corporal and people like that. They were that little bit behind the infantrymen themselves.
So you moved up to the New Zealanders. This will be in the Alamein line, was it?
Yes. We joined the somewhere near the Katara Depression. And New Zealanders were, I think we joined the New Zealanders, as a matter of fact, because we were right with them all the time. We weren't, I don't think we were there as a division then. I think it was just when the 3rd Brigade that was formed was sent up into the Alamein line. And we joined we were near, quite near to the New Zealand Division and where they were, and the Katara Depression was on the left-hand side of us, of course the enemy were front, and we were under observation all the time, and the conditions were absolutely murder there, because the flies were so bad that we were under, they could see us, we were being shelled. And we had to go for our food when we from different areas to collect our food in the mess tin. And you'd go out towards the cookhouse to get your stew and your pot of tea, and then they would shell, and then you would be down with your nose in the sand. And when you did get back with it, and you got down into your slit trench, there were that many flies. There would be 5 or 6 flies in your cup of tea before you took a drink out of it, and you're trying to waft the flies away from your food that you were trying to eat, and it was absolutely terrible. In the end, I think we stopped the troops from going mad. The issue was out with nets to put over our steel helmets and to keep the flies off your face, and we actually used to lift the net and put the spoon into the food and eat like that. And I was took in on a position, and this might have been responsible for some of the flies, and there was a bit of a parapet, and there was 2 of us in this litter, and a bit of parapet in front, and that was when we first went up there into the line. And there was a terrible smell, especially at night time. So on the morning we started to look around to see what the smell was, and the parapet was a dead body, and the sand had blown over the top of him and half covered him, or he'd been half buried, not buried enough, and it was a body. And I think it was an Italian soldier, so one of the lads went to pull it out of the road, and the leg was going to leave the body, so I said leave it, and I went and I saw the MO, and I told him what was happening. He says, you cannot bury it. I said no. He said, well, he said you'll have to just get some petrol and burn it. So we got a lot of petrol, and we just set fire to it and burned it, and we'll put him over cross up, Italian soldier cremated, and the date, and that was it for there. But the worst part about it was the flies. They're terrible. eyes, anywhere where there were a little bit of lava on your mouth, they were there all the time. And then we had no colour sergeant, lost the colour sergeant, and all the carriers had to be handed over, because I think it was something to do with the attack they expected Rommel to put in the Qatar Depression. So it was my job to say to the sergeant major and collect all the carriers, get them all fitted up with if there was anything short in the tool or whatever they needed for the carrier. We got it all together, and we lined all these carriers up. The QM went and got the spare parts, brought them back, and we had to take them down to another division, I think it was. It might have been, we just had been joined by the 44th Division from England. It might have been them, but I don't know. But however, we lined all these carriers up and we handed them over to them. I think they were going to be used as bait, because of the Qatar Depression with very soft sand, and the heavier tanks were going to be in trouble if they were there. So I think they were going to be sent out as bait for the if they were going to be attacked, for the tanks to come in there, which I think actually did that. So we took all these carriers away, and we travelled during the day, and we got them delivered. We'll come back at night time, and it was a Major Riley that was with us, and he got lost. So I said, well, to him, I said, well, if you're lost, I said, there's minefields all about here. So he bed down. He said, they haven't brought me anything to bed down with. I said, all these soldiers have all got a blanket, they're all prepared. I said, and you haven't got anything to bed down with you. He said, well, that's it. He said, I thought I would be back. I said, well, you're never sure. So we went round the truck that we had to try and find out if there was the one to take us back, to find out if there was anything, and there was no lad that spare blankets or anything. So there was a camouflage netting, big camouflage netting. I said, well, the only thing I can do for you is lie in that camouflage netting, we'll cover you up, and that'll have to be you for the night. And we did, we lagged up for the night, and yeah, I don't know what kind of a night he had, but he was wrapped up in camouflage and on the bottom. And we got back, and he had a report of the brigade major, and he took me in. So, and I think he must have been pleased with the job I'd done, because we'd had no colour sergeant. And he took me in to see the brigade major, and he said, the major's been telling me about the good job you've done, and, you know, it was a bit tough